It's time to go back to school with Professor Fish, Southern Colorado's only show dedicated to college athletics, University of Fish.
Oh, man, I think the clock is slow.
Class is now in session.
I don't feel tardy.
Here's the professor, Tim Fisher.
Welcome to the University of Fish. I am the professor, Tim Fisher, and Cam Newton set the tone for this whole week's show. Because, you know, you've heard from Jesse Palmer from Land of 10. You've heard from Kurt Bowles with the Austin Statesman. We've talked to all these guys. This week, it's all about the ladies. Thank you, Cam Newton, for the idea, because women know their sports. They know their routes. We're joined right now by the editor of the sports section of the OU Daily. Yes, a college paper that has a female as the sports editor. Kelly Stacy, how you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing good. I know you're there in the land of Norman, got Iowa State later today. But first off, I want to get your thoughts on what Cam Newton said the other day about how it was funny that a female would ask about routes. What do you think about all that?
I think that it was extremely disrespectful and obviously very sexist. It was uncalled for, and it was pretty obvious as he was saying it, if you watch the video, that he expected people to laugh along with him. And I know from the people that I work with and the men I work with, no one really thinks that way. And so it was shocking to me, and I've faced sexism in my job, but I never expected it to come from an athlete in the NFL, someone who's already went through college and been trained by PR for how to deal with the media. And I just thought it was incredibly disrespectful and condescending. And I was just in shock whenever I heard about it. Honestly, it was very shocking, and it's very upsetting to know that we still deal with that.
What's been the response from the staff there at the OU Daily? Is it pretty much the same kind of thought?
Yeah, everyone here obviously was not happy with what was said. I worked with a lot of men on the sports desk, but one of my football beat writers who I work with on a regular basis is also a woman. And so we didn't take that well at all. The men that I work with didn't take it well at all. And I know a lot of them tweeted about it and really said, you know, there's no place for the sexism in sports journalism, and there's no reason for it.
Now, okay, you work on a college paper, so you're dealing with athletes that, you know, when they're covered in high school sports, it is generally guys working, you know, small town papers or the prep beat or whatever. But we're talking about college athletes now, haven't had the training in the media that pro athletes have had. How are you received by Oklahoma players?
Oklahoma players are really respectful, and I started on the football beat last year. I was actually surprised. I kind of expected to experience some sexism, but they have actually, their communications department talks to them before they're ever really allowed to speak to the media. So they're pretty actually highly policed here. And even whenever they don't have someone from communications standing right beside us while we're talking, they've always been very respectful toward me. They've never been condescending when answering my questions or seemed shocked to know that I actually know about routes. So I've had, you know, a really good experience with athletes, and that's part of why this was so shocking for me and why I really couldn't believe that someone who's been through all of this, like Cam Newton, and is at that level, is still making comments like that.
Okay, now, through your 2 years on the football beat, you've had your chance to talk to a lot of players. Who has been your favorite player to talk to on the Oklahoma football team?
I think my favorite player to talk to would have to be cornerback Jordan Thomas. He's a senior this year. He's always very willing to speak to us. He's very open, and he's a really great quote, and he's really good about being very passionate about everything that he says. He's not thinking about what he's saying as he's saying it. He's not scripted at all. He's very much telling you how he actually feels. And he really can kind of set the tone of the locker room by just the way that he speaks to people. And he does it so well with the media. And another one of the guys who just never been rude to me at all.
Well, good, because I really like Jordan as well. I'm an OU alum. All my listeners know that. So there is a bit of homerism that comes into play there. I try to be subjective since I am a journalist. Well, I call myself one at least. But let's talk a little bit about the Oklahoma team this year on the field, not what they do off the field talking to reporters. So far, been a great season, not really missing a step with Bob Stoops retiring. What are your thoughts on Lincoln Riley?
I think that Lincoln Riley is a great fit for this program. He seems like the natural person to step in after Bob. He's done really well, and he really connects with his players. I think that's a big part of why they've still been so successful, is that he was already here. He was very comfortable with the offense, and there's been a lot of talk from guys on the defense about how he was really in the defensive room some last year, even whenever he had nothing really to do with it. He was still reaching out. So he had those connections. And whenever he took over, they didn't really miss a step because they were all very confident in their new coach.
Okay, we're coming into league play. We've already kind of started it off a couple weeks ago. But now we have Iowa State coming in. The Baylor game, you know, everybody goes, what? Baylor is horrible this year. Why was the game so close? They did get 8 players back from suspension for that game. It was Waco at night. We know how Texas games at night can be crazy because strange things happen in Lubbock and strange things happen on the Brazos as well. But luckily, the Sooners got away with a win. Iowa State coming in later, just in a couple hours. How do you think the offense is going to perform against Iowa State, who has shown that they're a little bit better than they have been the past few years?
I think the offense is going to perform pretty well tomorrow. I think that they've finally got their rhythm whenever it comes to running backs. Trey Sermon is very clearly very good at being a closer, kind of like Samaje Perine was. And it's pretty obvious that they're going to lean more on him and Abdul Adams as opposed to Rodney Anderson and Marcellus Sutton. It seems that they've really found their groove running-wise and how they want to execute that every game. And I think that CeeDee Lamb is just going to continue to shine as a receiver. He's had an incredible season so far as a true freshman. I think Baker is going to continue doing what Baker does. I think he realized that his personal foul from Baylor was something that can't happen again. He said it in the press conference on Monday. He's more determined to play a more careful game this week and to not make those small mistakes.
Well, he did make Baylor his son. He was their daddy that night. I will have to say that. Yeah. He had a great game. Baker's been playing lights out for the past 3 years there at Oklahoma, and then even when he was a walk-on at Texas Tech, been very impressed with him. But it is eerily similar when you look at CD3. Sorry, I'm going by his Twitter handle, CeeDee Lamb. Mm-hmm. And you look at him and you look last year at Dede Westbrook. The build is a lot the same. The speed is the same, except CD is a little bit bigger, a little bit thicker than Westbrook. So he can hopefully take some hits a little bit better than we saw Dede go down in Bedlam last year. I think that CD, it's strange. You know, we went from Dede and we went down one letter. Now we're CD. But, no, CeeDee Lamb looks like a star in the making. Exciting. I mean, I'm excited to see what happens throughout his career there at Oklahoma. Now, hopefully you can stick around with us because you're going to be the guest picker this week on Fish's Picks. Can you stick around?
Yes, I can.
All right, we'll be right back here on the University of Fish. You're listening to Extra Sports 1300.
Everyone, back in your seats. University of Fish is back in session.
Welcome back, and now we are joined by, I've got to already name her, an adjunct professor. We're talking with Angelique Shengelis, the angel of the big house. And before we get into the battle for Paul Bunyan's axe, let's talk about our buddy down there in Charlotte, North Carolina, Cam Newton. Now, I know this may seem like a gimmick show this week because I'm only talking to lady sports writers, but I had you on long before Cam Newton ever said this because I know you know your football. I know you know your routes. What did you think about what Cam Newton said?
You know, when I first read it, I was thinking about what would my reaction have been, and I think in print it looked different than it did on video. And my first reaction was, oh, I would have laughed him off. And then when I watched the video, I was incensed because I thought he looked, I thought it was very condescending. I mean, the comments were condescending. There's no doubt about it. And, but the way he looked and smiling about it, you know, some people, I've listened to sports talk radio in the Detroit area the last couple of days, and people are saying, you know, maybe in some weird way, was he trying to compliment her? And I don't think so, based on her comments about their conversation afterwards. And I mean, I just kind of tried to put myself in her place because, frankly, I haven't had that experience. And I have a feeling I would have reacted right there, and that probably wouldn't have been good either. But, yeah, I mean, I saw his apology last night, and I'm glad he did it. But, I mean, I'm not sure how sincere it was, but I'm glad he did it.
I'm glad he did it as well. But let's talk about, well, maybe if you would have came back with, you know, I may not know my routes, but then again, you can tell me all about stealing laptops. She could have came back with something like that, and I'm sure that may have been one of your responses. But I know you know your football. You've got your book, Michigan Man, which I'm still waiting for my copy, by the way.
Yes, I will make sure it gets there, I promise.
Okay, but speaking of Michigan men, we've got a new one under center. John O'Korn will be starting this game against Michigan State. Any updates on Wilton Spate?
No, not really. And when I asked Jim about it on Monday, I mean, I asked for the nature of the injury because there's been some speculation. I mean, when I watched it in real time and saw that second hit, the late hit, I really thought it was more, you know, kind of like a whiplash injury the way he hit him. And the fact that Harbaugh later, when he was on Monday after the game, talking about how poor their medical facilities were and how they had to take Wilton off-site to get an x-ray, and then he mentioned they didn't have a brace available for him. I'm assuming it was some kind of a neck brace. And, you know, he's going to be out several games. So I think this is one of those things where you just have to rest and continue to rest until it finally heals. And that can take, I was Googling this stuff as Harbaugh recommended, you know, you'll look up the Mayo Clinic, and it can take several weeks.
I don't know how many fans were on WebMD trying to figure out the diagnosis. But when you saw O'Korn come in, all season long been having problems in the red zone, and that seemed to kind of like go away with O'Korn under center.
It really did. I mean, one touchdown and 10 red zone visits, and then all of a sudden he's 3 for 3. And two of those drives were really long. They were about 86 yards, I think 82 yards, something like that. And, you know, I thought he looked, it was very different than his performance as a starter in the Indiana game last year. And of course, I mean, the conditions were terrible. The snow, I mean, it looked pretty, but it wasn't easy to play in. And it was hard to say, you know, are you going to see the same John O'Korn as we all saw in the Indiana game? And he came in and I thought he looked like he had an instant command. And I thought the players knew that, hey, you know, we got to help this guy. He's coming off the bench and we got to play for him. And I think they did. And I think they all really respect what he's done in the offseason. And I'll tell you, in this camp, after he lost out to Wilton, he did say he feels like he's gotten his confidence back. He lost it after he was benched to Houston and then transferred to Michigan. And I think Pep Hamilton, pass game coordinator, has been really, really a big factor in his transition, in becoming confident again.
Well, we've seen the offense start clicking last week, the week before, because you had your off week last week. But what does the defense have to do to stop Michigan State later today?
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be the key. And it's the top-ranked defense in the country. It's the top-ranked defense against the run. If the conditions are as bad as the early forecasts say, I mean, it could be really crummy tomorrow night. I would imagine that makes this more of a ground game on both sides, and I think that plays into Michigan's wheelhouse. And, you know, I think they have to really watch Brian Lewerke. I think he's a really good quarterback. I don't want to say he's underrated because I think people think he's a really good quarterback. And if they don't fumble like they did early on, I mean, they didn't have that issue last week against Iowa. I mean, I think that they have a great backfield, and Lewerke is a threat, but I do think this is Michigan's strength. It'll play into that. And not saying they won't get any yards, but I think that that's where Michigan has its edge. And vice versa. I mean, the Michigan's offensive line is not great. I don't think Michigan State's offensive line is great, but Michigan State's defensive line is really getting good. And I think it's just going to be a battle of the two defenses, frankly.
So who walks out with Paul Bunyan's axe?
I've got Michigan winning this one. And I picked a low scoring. I think it's going to be about 17-10, 17-13, something like that. I certainly think the spread's too big right now. And but I do think, I mean, I'm not going to say, oh, home field advantage. Maybe that has something to do with it. They'll be under the lights at Michigan Stadium. And I'll tell you, the players who were there 2 years ago for that trouble with the snap game, they remember that. And they all talked about it quite a bit the last 2 weeks. And that left them with something very bitter. And I think that they've made that clear to their teammates, that they kind of want to wash that one away finally by winning for the first time in Michigan Stadium since that game. In this rivalry, I mean.
And it will be a big game under the lights there at the Big House. We're talking with Angelique Shengelis, the angel of the Big House, adjunct professor now as well to her titles. I'm waiting to see that on her Twitter bio. And so please get that taken care of, or because we'll have to talk about tenure.
Well, I get suspended. Oh, no.
Without pay. Then again, I'm not paying you anyway. Angelique, thank you for joining us this morning.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Now we're joined by Christy Chirinos. Who is she? She's a beat writer for the Miami Hurricane for the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Christy, little thing happened this week. You know, it was kind of funny that a female would ask about routes. I bet you could diagram a route tree better than I could. How are you doing today?
I am doing well. How are you, Tim?
Not bad. Not bad. So how are your route trees?
Listen, you know, I can, I'm not great with drawing even straight lines, but I think I can manage a go route. I can do a slant. I can do, you know, hitch and go a little bit, but, you know, I'm geometry and straight lines were never kind of my thing. If I didn't have a ruler, it was going to be problematic, but I can see them. I know what they are. I can sometimes ask quarterbacks questions about them.
And when you ask quarterbacks, whether it be Brad Kaya, who's gone now, or other quarterbacks you've covered at Miami, did you ever get a response like Cam Newton gave the young Charlotte Observer writer?
Absolutely not. I've got to say this. I have been very fortunate throughout most of my career to cover young men, whether it was during my times on the prep beat for the Sentinel or when I moved up to Miami. I've covered a lot of young men that, you know, they see me standing there and asking them questions and they take me seriously. And I think we've been really fortunate, at least in the South Florida market. You know, I compete with her every day, but Susan Mellor Degnan has been doing this for years. She's covered the University of Miami for a long time. Michelle Kaufman has covered the Miami basketball program for a long time. So I think athletes at Miami have been exposed to women covering their teams, you know, before I got there a few years ago. So it's been great. Most of the kids are a lot of fun to deal with, a lot of thoughtful kids that have good things to say. And none of them has ever given me a response like that. And, you know, I would say probably the worst that I get these days is from social media, but I'm really lucky that there's a lot of good guys that I cover, a lot of good guys that I work with. And I've never had a moment like the one that that Jordan Rodriguez had yesterday or earlier this week. So hopefully I can keep that going.
And I can judge how you felt about it just by what you just said. Because, you know, I mean, there were so many. She could have went off on him right there. She could have. I mean, because Cam has enough stuff in his past. She's going, well, I mean, you know, she could say, I may not know about routes, but I know when school pays me or anything, you know. I mean, there's anything she could have done. I mean, I've said earlier about the whole laptop thing, so I'm not going to go there again. But no, but she was reserved and kept it in private and tried to go one-on-one with him. I've never really liked Cam Newton, probably because I never liked Auburn either. But anyway,
She handled it with a lot of grace, a lot of strength, and good for her for keeping her cool in a moment that, you know, a lot of us, men or women, probably wouldn't have been very cool to deal with.
Yes, but let's talk about some college football. You know, we're talking about playing school. Thank you, Cardale Jones, for that. But Miami, Florida State, when you hear those two teams put together on the field, you never know what's going to happen. You don't know if it's going to be a wide right again, a wide left. You never know. I mean, because it's a rivalry game. Yes, Florida State looks down and has looked like nothing near the team we thought we were going to see this year as soon as DeAndre Francois went down. But what does Miami have to do on offense against what is actually a pretty capable Florida State defense?
Well, that's what I think. You know, I think a lot of people have kind of forgotten that. They've focused so much on the offensive struggles. They haven't realized that Florida State defense is still pretty good. I mean, that defense gave Alabama a run for its money for most of that game. So Miami is just going to have to be smart tomorrow. They're going to need Mark Walton to be at his best. And that's going to be interesting to watch because he's been dealing with that ankle injury for a couple of weeks now. So they're going to need him at his best, and they're going to need Malik Rozier to just, you know, keep his cool, keep his poise. It's his first time starting in this game, in this rivalry. So, but if he can stay poised, use the playmakers around him, if Mark Walton can move as well as we've been told he can move, it can be good. They've got the ability to make plays, and that's what I'm looking forward to seeing from them, especially now that, like, you know, they've got Amon Richards back, too, after he missed the first two games. And, you know, he was lights out against Duke. If he can build on that, Miami has the potential to finally break through and end the streak, which I know is driving them all crazy.
Oh, I'm sure it is. Now, let's flip the field. What does have missed saying that the past few years. I've missed calling them the U because they haven't had the swagger that the U should have. But what does the U have to do on defense to stop kind of a new-look Florida State offense?
Well, one of the things that's been really interesting since Mark Richt and Manny Diaz have arrived has been that Manny Diaz has wanted to play an aggressive defense. It's a little different than what we saw under Al Golden and Mark D'Onofrio, and these kids love it. They love going for the quarterback. They love going for the ball. They love just, you know, it's really just get after guys. And that's what they're going to do. They know that James Blackman is a freshman. They know that he is, you know, like Malik Rozier playing in this game, but without some of the experience and the size that Malik Rozier has. So I wouldn't be shocked to see them go after him pretty hard throughout the day. And, you know, that front seven is supposed to be one of the best in the ACC. They showed that potential against Duke last week. They saw Wake Forest get 17 tackles for loss against Florida State last week, and they're licking their chops. They, you know, Shaq Quarterman, RJ McIntosh, Michael Pinckney, you know, Chad Thomas, Joe Jackson, those guys are ready to go. And, you know, if they can do that, they can help cover up some of the mistakes in the secondary that we've seen. And like I said, I expect, you know, they're going to go full go at James Blackman, and that's going to be interesting because those guys have experience, they have size, they have speed, they have power, and Blackman is, you know, 165 pounds. So might be interesting to see how that goes.
It will be a very interesting game. We're talking with Christy Chirinos of the South Florida Sun Sentinel. She covers the Miami Hurricane. Do they have their swagger back?
If anybody has been watching some of these games, and they were in prime time against Duke last week, you will have seen the turnover chain, right? That big, gaudy gold necklace that they give to the player that gets the turnover. And the kids love it. They come running off the field. I mean, Mark Richt's joke, guys, you got to get off the field before you take your helmet off. But then they get that chain, they wear it, they take pictures, they put it back in the box, and then the next guy gets it. But that was a little bit of seeing swagger, of seeing that these guys are having fun, of seeing that they are enjoying playing football again. So, yeah, you're starting to see the swagger come back a little bit, but there's nothing like a win against Florida State for them to get that swagger back completely.
That's true, and college football is better when Miami is actually competitive in the national scene, not just the ACC scene. Christy Chirinos, look forward to talking to you throughout the season. Thanks for joining the University of Fish today.
Not a problem. Thank you so much for having me.
We're going to take a break now, but when we get back, we'll be going to the state of Texas. Two big games there this week. The only ranked versus ranked, and number one, Alabama, travels to Texas A&M. We'll talk to one lady. She can cover both games. When we come back here on the University of Fish, you're listening to Extra Sports 1300.
Everyone, back in your seats. Professor Fish is giving a lecture.
Welcome back. Now, when I talk about the state of Texas, there's only a few people I will go to, and one of these people, thankfully to Cam Newton, I have found this week.
It's funny to hear a female talk about routes. Like, it's funny.
And we are talking with Suzanne Halliburton of the Austin American-Statesman. Suzanne, how you doing this morning?
I am doing fabulous.
So first things first, what did you think about Cam Newton the other day?
You know, it was kind of weird because I haven't heard a player or a coach talk to me like that in probably 20 years. And it was just kind of weird to hear it in 2017 because I didn't think that question was stupid in any stretch. And I would think that the Carolina media who cover them ask him about routes all the time.
Yeah, and the Carolina media that covers him has been lambasting him all week. But
that's
not why I got you on. I got you on because you do know your football. You know your routes. And so we're going to start off with a team just to the north of you, TCU, in the only ranked versus ranked game this week is TCU in West Virginia. ESPN Game Day is there. Obviously, if it's TCU West Virginia, it's got to be the only ranked versus ranked team if Game Day is there, because I wouldn't go there otherwise. But Amon Carter Stadium is going to be crazy today. And these coaches, well, I don't know how much they know about each other, but we saw what Gary Patterson and his squad did against Oklahoma State that runs pretty much the same offense because Dana Holgorsen used to be the offensive coordinator at Oklahoma State. How do you see this game going?
Well, I see TCU winning it. I think the spread is like 13.5, 14 points. I think it's going to be a single-digit game. Gary Patterson is a defensive-minded coach, and he came kind of begrudgingly to the whole up-tempo offense that the Big 12 runs because he realized he needed to at least run that to be competitive. But he is going to beat you by playing good defense. Now, coincidentally, Dana Holgorsen figured out that the best way for him to win big is also to have a good defense. And so the Mountaineers, and when I say good defense, statistically, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the way the defense has to be played with these up-tempo spreads. And West Virginia does as good a job as anybody in the Big 12 about doing that. And I'm also going to tell you something weird, too, is that whoever runs the ball the best is going to win this game because that's like the latest twist on these kind of up-tempo offenses is running the ball well.
And it's going to be an exciting game, but to me, it's not the biggest game in the state of Texas this week. If it had not been for let's say the last two-thirds of the second half of the opening game, A&M would be 5-0. They'd be ranked, but then again, we've seen A&M go 5-0 for the past few years and then saw the season just fall down. You write about A&M all the time. They are hosting Alabama. If you want to talk defenses, Alabama's got one, but what does A&M have to do on the offensive side of the ball to move it against this Bama defense?
You know, and I still have not figured out how they're going to do that. A&M got really far ahead of UCLA in the first half when they used the two-back offense. And then once UCLA at halftime made some adjustments on that and shut that down and then allowed Josh Rosen, you know, enough stops to let Josh Rosen throw the ball until oblivion, until they beat A&M. A&M's offense has been inconsistent, and that's not a surprise because they have a true freshman as a quarterback, Kellen Mond. But what's kind of hurt Kellen is the fact that the receivers are all so green except for Christian Kirk. And if you've got a good defense, and Alabama has a hell of a defense, you can take one receiver out of the mix. And so A&M's got some good running backs. You know, Travion Williams is really fast. Keith Ford is solid. I just don't know if their offense is diverse enough that they can really beat a team like Alabama.
Well, now let's flip. Okay, go ahead.
And Kellen Mond is, like I said, he's a true freshman. He started off the year 3-for-17 against UCLA, but he completes about 50% of his passes. And you can't, with that kind of completion percentage, you really can't run a consistent up-tempo, which is what A&M would really like to do. And but his issue is that I always thought that he was a run-first kind of quarterback who needed to work on his passing game. And basically, this part of the season, he has really stayed in the pocket and tried to improve his passing game and hasn't run as much until last week when I think he had 16 carries.
Now, let's flip the field. Okay, Alabama on offense and that Aggie defense that we've seen, you know, they've shown some holes. I mean, even against, you know, you look at the Arkansas game, gave up a lot of yards, and we know the yards they gave up against UCLA. How do they stop this Bama offense, or do they?
You know, I don't – A&M has not been great at stopping the run. It looks – they look good on paper this year, but that is not what they're best at. And what they really can do is rush the quarterback. They've got some very active linebackers, and John Chavis is going to send an occasional blitz. They're getting some good rush from their defensive end. They actually have more sacks now than they did this time a year ago when Myles Garrett was their star player. And but I think what they do best is basically playing into Alabama's hands, because you flush Jalen Hurts out of the pocket, and he's going to beat you with his legs. And he's gotten, I think he completes 62 to 64% of his passes. And Nick Saban is talking about how he keeps his eyes downfield. And so he can scramble around in the pocket until the receivers are, you know, running their scramble drills. And he can hit somebody who's going to be wide open if A&M decides to blitz and rush a lot. So that's, I just think that that's a bad matchup, A&M's defense against Alabama's offense, because they are going to throw enough to keep the pressure off their running offense. And I just don't think that's where the A&M talent is.
Now, let's suppose we have an outcome kind of like the Tennessee-Georgia game last week, where Georgia just went into Neyland Stadium and just wiped out Tennessee. If that happens at Kyle Field, how hot? I mean, I know it's already hot on Kevin Sumlin, but is it like the UCLA game where Regents are calling for his firing, and would you think they'd do anything midseason?
No. If they lose to Alabama tomorrow, no. I don't think. As the talk went after the UCLA game, if A&M turned around and lost to Arkansas and South Carolina, then yeah. Now, to Sumlin's credit, he's playing a lot of young kids, and he's kept them focused, and they have won four games in a row, although they've been behind in three of those games, and against Nicholls State, they were tied in the fourth quarter. But if you lose to Alabama and you're a 26.5-point underdog, I don't think people will be mad about it, but they're not going to be yelling for his head. Now, if they lose to Florida, and if they lose to Auburn, and if they lose to Mississippi State, they lose to LSU. Yeah, that's going to happen. But I think that the Regents, who like to post things on social media, would probably leave someone alone, unless it's something like that 59-0 game that happened in 2014 when Kenny Hill was the quarterback at A&M before he was at TCU.
Okay. Now, if you look in your crystal ball, is someone coaching there next year?
You know, I don't know how good my crystal ball is, and for some reason, you know, let's be honest, I think the SEC West, except for Alabama and maybe Auburn, kind of sucks.
Oh, yeah, the SEC, once you look past Alabama and Georgia right now, the SEC kind of looks like trash.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing special about it, and so A&M gets Auburn, Mississippi State at home. They're going to play Ole Miss, and, you know, Ole Miss may be able to beat them by passing the ball like they did last year. But there's a chance that someone's team is going to be better than 8-5, and say he's 9-3, he stays. And so I don't know if something as much as he did coaching, as much as the SEC just kind of sucks.
Yeah. Well, Suzanne Halliburton with the Austin American Statesman, you are welcome into the university anytime. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Oh, well, thanks for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Now, when we come back, we're going to have Kelly Stacey from the OU Daily rejoin us to get her picks on Fish's Picks this week. We'll see how much females know football when we come back right here on the University of Fish on Extra Sports 1300.
Let's take a step out on the quad. Professor Fish is giving a lecture.
Welcome back. It is that time, the time that everybody looks forward to each week. It's time for Fish's Picks. Last week, I made you money again, 7-3, 2 weeks in a row. So if you're betting at home, you're making some money. If you're losing any money by not listening to me, don't get mad at me. My wife gets mad at me when I lose money, so I don't need to deal with your wife as well. But we're joined once again by Kelly Stacey, the sports editor of the OU Daily. That's the student paper there on the University of Oklahoma. Kelly, you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Okay. Yep. We're going to start off in the SEC. LSU traveling to Florida. Last year, this was a hurricane game. LSU coming off the embarrassing loss to Troy State. Florida, who in the past couple of games looks like they might be finding some offense. How do you see this game?
You know, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to pick Florida. I do think that they're kind of on the rise right now, and generally I don't have much faith in Florida, but after the way LSU played last week, I think that the Gators are actually going to pull this off.
So you got the Gators. Okay. Now, I think LSU has to bounce back, because if they don't bounce back, you would never see a hotter seat on a first-year coach than you'll see on Ed Orgeron, because LSU faithful are not going to take losing to Troy and turning around losing to Florida, who is their rival, because the SEC has made sure this game is played every year. But I've got to take the Gators in the swamp as well. I'm going with you. We've got to have some differences in opinion here, because someone's got to win. Someone's got to win. A Big Ten game. Now, I know everybody in Norman was as happy as I was when we saw Maryland beat Texas the first week of the season. Maryland now travels to the Horseshoe, where, you know, Oklahoma kind of likes it as well because of what we did. I can't say we. What Oklahoma did that night up in the Horseshoe when Baker planted the flag. Will the Terps be planting a flag later today?
I do not see that happening. Maryland is not that bad of a team this year, but I just don't think that they're going to go into the Horseshoe and be able to beat Ohio State.
Okay, so you're going with the Buckeyes. Now, I know that Urban Meyer's not happy this is a night game. He thinks they should have no more than two night games a year because it's hard on the players. The fans might like it, but it's hard on the players to wait all day. I don't buy that. It's just Urban Meyer's normal crying that he does. But Ohio State will paste Maryland in this game. Now we move to the Pac-12. Arizona taking on the CU Buffs. Now, Arizona hadn't had a really good year. We're doing Colorado because I like to try to keep my local teams in it to keep my local fans happy. So Arizona, the Wildcats, or CU Buffs?
I'm going Colorado. I think it's going to be close, but I think they're going to pull it out.
All right. Well, Colorado's had a couple rough games, UCLA and Washington, but I don't think Arizona has anything. Rich Rod's probably on his way out there in Tucson. So take Ralphie and the Buffs. Colorado's going to win. Wake Forest and Clemson moving to the ACC. We've already seen Louisville lose this week to North Carolina State Thursday night. But Wake Forest quietly sitting there with one loss so far, sitting there at 4-1. Clemson, you know, hasn't had a real tough game other than the Auburn game, and I don't think Auburn's that good. How do you see the Demon Deacons and the Tigers?
I'm going to go Clemson on this one. Not very original, but I just don't think that Wake Forest is going to have enough to pull that win out. I think Clemson is they're not great this year, but they're far better than Wake Forest, in my opinion.
Wake Forest is an up-and-coming team in the ACC, but they haven't came up far enough. Take Clemson, touch and Howard draw before they run down to the hill in the Death Valley. Clemson will win this game going away. Now we have the first leg of the Commander-in-Chief Trophy. Air Force has won it the past couple years. They beat Navy and Army the past couple years. Now you're looking at a 1-3 Air Force team. All they have beat is FCS VMI against a Navy team that's been playing really well this year. They're playing in Annapolis. How do you see this one?
I'm going to go Navy. Once again, Air Force has had a really rough season, and I don't think that that's going to change for this game.
Well, this is where we might differ, because I know that Air Force is battle-tested because they played very well against Michigan in the Big House. I don't think that the Naval Marine Stadium in Annapolis is going to be near as daunting as it was in the Big House. Air Force's offense gets on track. It played well against San Diego State, but that was in a torrential downpour here in Colorado Springs. Take the Falcons. Yes, that's, I'm really being a homer because that is the hometown team. Washington State, fresh off the comeback win against USC up on the Palouse, now travels to Autzen Stadium to take on the Oregon Ducks, another quiet 4-1 team who made Nebraska look silly, but then again, everybody has this year. Ducks or Cougs?
I have to go Washington State. I have a lot of faith in Mike Leach, and I find that picking against him is usually a bad bet for me, so definitely Washington State.
I think Washington State is probably the best team in the Pac-12 this year. That Apple Cup game against Washington is going to be a great game there on the last week of the season, which will decide the Pac-12 North, because Washington State will beat Oregon. We have to differ here a little bit more, because I don't know how confident I am in my Air Force pick, and I don't think we'll differ on this game next. Alabama traveling to Kyle Field to take on Texas A&M. A&M, another quiet 4-1 team. If it hadn't been for that second-half comeback that UCLA had opening weekend, they'd be sitting there at 5-0, and with the SEC bias in the media, they'd probably be in the top 10. But as it is, they're unranked, taking on the number one team in Alabama. How do you see this one?
I'm going to go Alabama, as probably expected. I don't see Texas A&M being able to beat them. And if they don't get on track, Kevin Sumlin is going to be out of there at the end of this year.
Well, you just heard in the last segment Suzanne Halliburton of the Austin American-Statesman say she had no idea how the offense was going to move against Bama's defense, and she had no idea how the defense was going to stop Bama. So there's no other logical choice, because I know my ladies know football, so I'm going with her and saying that Alabama will win this one going away. Now, this one we talked about earlier as well, with Christy Chirinos from Miami. Miami going to Florida State. Florida State looks like a shell of the team they were supposed to be as soon as DeAndre Francois went down in that first game against Alabama. But this is a rivalry game, so you throw all that out. You've got the Hurricanes taking on the Noles at Doak. How do you see this one?
I think that this is going to be a really close game, but I'm going to go Miami. I think Florida State hasn't looked that great this year. And with it being a rivalry, anything can happen. So Miami's going to win it.
I think the U is getting a little bit of swagger back, especially under Mark Richt. Mark Richt was a great coach at Georgia, just couldn't ever get over the hump in the SEC. The ACC, not as daunting, well, maybe this year, because other than Bama and Georgia, the SEC looks like trash this year. But Miami will go into Doak Campbell and win this game. I know we're not going to differ on this next game. I know that. Iowa State, the Cyclones, blowing into the Palace on the Prairie. That, of course, being Owen Field at Memorial Stadium right there in beautiful Norman, Oklahoma, where you are right now. You'll be at the game, I'm sure. Cyclones or Sooners?
OU is going to win this one, and by quite a bit. I don't see how Iowa State could possibly stop Baker Mayfield and the explosive offense that they've been able to create this year. OU is getting a lot of players back on defense. So I don't see how Iowa State could stack up to the Sooners.
I think the biggest competition in this game today, just in a couple hours here there in Norman, is going to be whether the fans buy the solid crimson uniforms. It's kind of a good look. It kind of looks like what Tampa Bay looked like Thursday night, except a different helmet. So we got the all crimson unis, Oklahoma going away in this game. That brings us to our last game of the week, the battle for Paul Bunyan's axe, Michigan State, who's had a couple good wins. You know, the Notre Dame game was really close, and then they had a good game against Iowa last week. But Michigan, who has seemed, you know, after that first game against Florida, you thought, okay, maybe Michigan's a world beater. That defense is great. Couple pedestrian outings leading into this game, but it is another rivalry game. This one in the Big House. How do you see it?
I think Michigan is going to take this one. I just think that they're the better team right now. I think that they have the momentum. And, yeah, I think they're going to win it.
And, you know, I've got to go with the Blue as well because, one, they're in the Big House. Two, Mark D'Antoni does not have that team all the way back. So what it ends up being is I am putting all my faith into the Air Force Falcons for me to beat you this week because otherwise you're going to beat me. If Air Force loses, you've beaten me for the week, and that's, I don't know. But that will show, as I've been doing all show long, that ladies know football. Kelly Stacy, sports editor of the OU Daily, thank you for joining us this week on the University of Fish.
Thank you for having me.
That's going to wrap up this week on the University of Fish, but don't worry. If you need more football, coming up next, the other football show, little footy action for you. Yes, soccer with Ryan Kaufman and Chris Braden coming up next here on Extra Sports 1300. And don't forget, at 12:30, we've got football night in the Springs on a Saturday. Ryan Kaufman and myself will be doing the call for Mesa Ridge and Widefield. So make sure you tune in for that, too. Until then, class dismissed.
Class dismissed.